Catholic Church.
Catholic Connection, weekday mornings at 8 a.m. on 990 WDEO.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
My guest this hour is Joshua Katz, who is a managing partner at the Enright Group here in Washington, D.C. Josh is an expert in national security and intelligence, and he has done a lot of interesting things that have led to this expertise. For example, he has advised members of Congress on security and intelligence. He has advised the White House. He has advised Fortune 100 companies, providing tactical and strategic experience that he got, for example, as a squad leader in a Ranger regiment in the United States Special Operation Command. Being a Ranger is cool. He also was recruited into the CIA as an intelligence officer and has lived to tell the tale. Joshua Katz, welcome to Church and Culture.
Thank you, Deal. Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Now, you recently published a column at the Christian Review about the security challenges of facing all these cities hosting Pope Francis on his visit. And I know you told me in conversation that there had already been one credible threat that had been evidently deterred. Is that correct?
That's correct. And unfortunately, there are a lot of others, a lot of other credible threats against this Pope for numerous reasons. Some of them are the what I call mainstream terrorist threats by ISIS, who has sworn to destroy the Catholic Church, to destroy the Vatican, and to also to kill the Pope. But there's a lot of other threats against this Pope as well, and I think we'll start to hear about them after the Pope has gone back to the Vatican.
Why will we hear them then? Is the idea to keep a lid on it from the point of view of the general public until after it's over?
Well, I think that there's a couple of reasons. First is, if I were the Vatican, I don't think I'd want to talk about the security risks of the Pope in the United States. Typically, when popes visit the United States, it's one of the safest stops along the Pope's world trip. Now, not so much, and that's very, very important, I think, for your listeners to understand. And I think also from the perspective, we're not going to really hear about them, is because the FBI, the Secret Service, local state and local law enforcement are all trying to prevent these threats from coming to fruition, and working very, very diligently together, but also with the Vatican, the Pope's personal security, in order to make sure that any of these threats are dealt with well before the Pope ever comes near them.
Now, when the Pope travels, is the Swiss Guard in charge of security, or is it a collaborative affair?
Well, they are in charge, but it also is a collaborative affair. He is obviously a head of state, and so the U.S. provides security for head of state visits. That is done by the Secret Service, in part with the Diplomatic Security Service for the State Department, FBI, local law enforcement. This papal visit has really garnered all hands on deck, so to speak, from national security to local security apparatus in the United States.
You mentioned to me again over coffee that is that the kind of threats we're looking at are not just against the person of the Holy Father, but against perhaps some proximate target that would be disruptive to his visit.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the thing that I think your view. One of the points here in our conversation that I think your viewers should really walk away with is that as a security professional, I know the Pope is in very, very good hands, both with the Swiss Guard as well as the entire U.S. security apparatus surrounding him. But it's the churches, the synagogues down the road near the near where the Pope is going to be visiting that are also targets, and because all of the attention is focused on the security bubble around the Pope, they're not really looking a mile, 2 miles out, and those congregants, the people that are coming together to maybe see the Pope give an address or give mass in a you know, maybe in closed circuit TV, those are the places that that are absolutely incredibly vulnerable, because the groups like ISIS would claim an absolute victory if they were to carry out an attack against those groups, even if it's not really within proximity of the Pope.
That's frightening to me, frankly. When you told me this last week, it really got me to thinking, because, I mean, venues like Washington, Philadelphia, New York, they're going to be filled with proximate targets like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is why I hope that people start to look at security not only being a function of government, which it is, but being a function of our community as well. And so we all have an obligation to each other, I believe, to be that first line of defense, to protect ourselves and to understand what the threat is and understand how vulnerable we are when we get together. It is frightening. But
Joshua, what you're saying reminds me of I've been to Israel a number of times. And when I'm there, I'm, you know, very involved with a lot of Israelis and Palestinians. And one thing I've learned being over there is that Israelis have a very, very high awareness of possibility of threats. And obviously their history has led them there. But is that the kind of awareness you're talking about?
That would be amazing. But we're not going to get there for some time, I think. I think it's irrational for us as Americans to make that leap, because that's, you know, decades long of dealing with that internal threat that we've just really started to identify and just started to have a taste of that. What I would say is we need to start at a little bit of a lower level. It would be great if we were just to start the conversation right now.
Well, that's what we're doing right now. And I know that I don't want to get into it at this moment. I want to do it after the break. But you have put together a program for institutions, churches, synagogues, parishes, to start to not just raise awareness, but actually train and to provide a sort of a culture of security in order to protect themselves against, you know, any threat that might be posed.
Yeah, and it all starts with this conversation deal. And I think with talking to religious leaders through all the faiths, the issue is fear. People are fearful of the situation and are having a really hard time grasping what they can do with such this overwhelming sense of fear and this sense of vulnerability. And I think that we can, in part, through conversations like this, move beyond that. And I think that people, like you and I were speaking about when we had coffee, was getting people to move beyond the fear, have the conversation, and realize that we don't have to be vulnerable, yet we don't have to be so closed off either. And that's a really important point.
The preparations for Pope Francis's visit, I've been seeing headlines that say that this is the most comprehensive and detailed security arrangement perhaps ever made. I mean, does that strike you as being an exaggeration?
No, it doesn't. And I think we have to ask ourselves why Pope Francis needs this much security. We have seen heads of state from all over the world come to the United States, and they don't garner or need this level of security. Why is it that Pope Francis needs such robust security, and especially in the United States? And the answer is, it's probably equally as scary to your listeners, is the fact that groups like ISIS will stop at nothing to attack the Pope, have said numerous times in their propaganda that they want to kill the Pope, and they are actively on U.S. soil plotting to do so.
Really? So here's a man who, I should say a pontiff, who from the very beginning has not portrayed himself in the bad sense, but been a man of peace, been a man who is a unifier. It's ironic that he would need this level of protection, such a historic level of protection.
Yeah, and I think actually it's because of his openness, his embrace of other faiths, his embrace of people around the world, his love of people, his the way he's reached out to the poor, and has really touched a nerve with fundamentalists, because fundamentalists find that to be utterly scary. That,
and we're talking about primarily Muslim fundamentalists, right?
Well, we are, I think, traditionally, but we're also seeing threats against the Pope that are not traditional Islamic.
Can you talk about those?
Not in a lot of detail, but suffice it to say, there are fundamentalists in other faiths who find the Pope and his peaceful message to be an affront to them. And I think whenever you are – and I want to caveat this by saying that the majority of threats against the Pope are, yes, from Islamic extremists. But there are other threats that law enforcement is dealing with that are not from – the Islamic extremist category. And there always will be, because I think whenever you are a head of state, there are people that wish to do you ill just because of ideological differences or what have you. And I want everybody to know that it's not just Islamic extremism that we have to protect the Pope from. But the major threat is from Islamic extremism.
What, you know, the one thing that I've always wanted to ask someone like you, security intelligence expert, and remind my listeners we're talking to Joshua Katz. there's really no protection, is there, against a lone wolf kind of threat?
There is, actually.
There is protection.
There is, and it's our community. The only way to prevent a lone wolf attack is for our communities, regardless of faith, and I speak about community in the traditional sense as well as the larger sense of society, we need to be more open and engaging with each other. And it's only then will we be able to identify and prevent lone wolves. But if we are going to sit back and try to build walls around ourselves and not engage with each other, there is no way to prevent a lone wolf attack.
I'm wondering if, say, for example, in Philadelphia or in any of the cities where Pope Francis is visiting, to your knowledge, is there any signage that is briefly telling people what to be on the lookout for?
You know, in all fairness to the Department of Homeland Security, there is, but the average person, they see something, say something, is a foreign concept. It's like, okay, great, yeah, see something, say something. Well, I mean, I see a lot of things. What exactly am I looking for, right?
Right.
What do I do if I see something that looks odd? Well, most people have no idea, and it's because
what do they do? I mean, we may have listeners who are actually going to be in one of these cities with the Holy Father. In fact, I'm sure there are people who are listening. I mean, what does the average Joe or Jane do when they see or hear something odd?
It's trust your instinct. So if you think something is odd, if something makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up, you need to say something. If something looks out of place and doesn't look like it should be there, you need to say something. If somebody looks out of place, you need to say something. Even if that saying something makes you feel guilty because you don't
want to accuse anybody, right?
No, and it's not an accusation. It's the when you approach law enforcement, especially in this sort of way, to convey that you're concerned about something, it's not that guy over there is a terrorist, right? That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is, hey, there's something about that gentleman over there or that lady over there that just seems out of place. Would you, officer, mind going and talk
to them? Check it out, basically.
Just check it out. And it's not the accusation. It's this doesn't make – for some reason I don't feel right. Officer, can you go check it out, right? Now, they may discount you, but I think that in these situations, until we can get more of the public engaged on what actually you need to look for, what are the signs – and there are lots of them.
Well, you know, but Josh, there's going to be huge crowds. You may see something that's actually really scary. I mean, that you want to do something immediately, but you're in a huge crowd. You don't see any law enforcement. You don't see any badges anywhere. What do you do then?
You know,
can you use your iPhone? Can you do something on your Android? Is there something you could, I mean, other than phone 911 or whatever, but, I mean, what can you do?
Well, I think if you think it's really that scary and you think there's no law enforcement around, you have a couple of choices, right? When it comes to a person, not a suspicious package, let's say, but a person, what I would say is the human interaction. Interacting with somebody is the greatest deterrent that we have. It is also the greatest way we can find out if that somebody who doesn't look right actually isn't right, or whether there is some other reason for why the hairs on the back of our neck stood up. And by engaging with that person, all too often, if that person has ill intent, they are going to, by being engaged, they are going to back down.
They're going to be deterred. That's a deterrent.
Yes, absolutely. And yes, it's scary for us because what we're doing is we're going up to a complete stranger and we're saying, we're talking to them. And what I'm not saying is people go up to them and say, you know, who are you and why are you here? No, we can do this in a very loving, very embraceful way. And just like we should, because I think Pope Francis' visit, is one of peace. It's one of love. It's one of accepting of our brothers and sisters that we can, in that message, we can not only make people feel welcome, but
we can check it out.
We can check it out. And that's important because that reaching out, I think in a lot of the lone wolf cases that I've seen, especially from white Christians, actually, that have converted to Islam and have plotted to attack their communities here in the United States, one of the resounding pieces that flows through all of them is they felt abandoned by their community, and they felt totally outside of the community. So from the lone wolf aspect, if we embrace, we are going to be able to keep people from wanting to even explore that possibility.
Does it really, I mean, I have this vision of going up to somebody and all of a sudden he reaches inside his shirt and pulls a string and we all blow up.
Mm.
I mean, you're saying it's a deterrent, but isn't there a certain risk when you even go up to somebody and say, hey, isn't this Pope great? Don't you love him? And they look at you really strange and then, you know, you're off the races.
Yeah, so there's it's a great point. So that's why one of the reasons why I say, you know, go to law enforcement first. But however, your audience and as well as, you know, my family and you are all faith-based people, right? We all believe in God. And so if we approach this from a faith standpoint, right? We have faith in God, that can take some of the fear out here. It doesn't, we are human, and we all do feel fear, but that person that may look odd may also be just fearful. They may be feel completely out of their element. They may have just had a really hard day. They may have gotten fired. There may be no nefarious intent. But they may also be fearful, and there's so much courage in approaching somebody you don't know, and engaging with them, and I think that as a group who has faith and as Americans, we should engage with other people.
Going back for a minute, because we're coming up to break time, to the security surrounding Pope Francis, do you have any idea in terms of sheer numbers how much security is being assigned in each of these cities?
It's a unprecedented amount. The numbers, I don't think it would be responsible for me to talk about the numbers, but I think it's suffice it to say, it's the numbers when you look at the totality is astronomical, a lot more than any other head of state, a lot more than other papal visits. Papal visits, I'm sorry.
Now, I'm taking a lot of this is going to be plainclothes?
Well, it's going to be a combination. So the Vatican has has hired independent contractors. There are plainclothes officers at the local level, plainclothes officers at the national level, but then there's also uniformed officers because having the presence, the visibility of security professionals that you can see is also a deterrent. It also has a calming effect. So it's not going to only be that which you cannot see. There's going to be a significant visible security presence.
Don't answer this if you can't, but I would assume there's going to be one base of operations for the entire visit. Is that correct?
They're going to have a they're going to be able to control the visit from a security aspect, no matter where Pope Francis is. So what's great is that modern technology has really enabled the military term of command and control of security to be done both near and far and to be collaborative. And that's the important part here, is that security is a collaborative effort. And if security is not collaborative, it does not work.
And you're confident that this has been planned so well that there will be no collaborative breakdown?
No, I'm not. I am confident that people are trying their best, but I think what we may see in the next months after the visit is passed and the community does reviews of what happened, it may be in the public eye, it may not be, but I think, again, the theme that we've been talking about since 9/11, that collaborative security posture, the collaborative security environment, is going to have broken down at the traditional levels and traditional places we have seen before 9/11 and after 9/11.
We'll come back to this. And Josh Katz, you're my Jewish friend, so I want to wish you Yom Kippur before the break.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with Joshua Katz right after this message.
I'm Peggy Stanton, and I'm inviting you to join me on Power from the Pews when I interview the people who are engaged in remarkable ministries that are making a real difference in their parishes and the world. That's this Saturday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
Here's a Family Minute with child psychologist Dr. Ray Guarendi from Ave Maria Radio.
Have you ever heard this one? Well, you enjoy them now because the teen years are coming up. Just wait till they're teenagers. You'll find out I liked parenting too the first 8 years. Frightening thought, isn't it? That these kids who you love, who love being with you, who share time with you, are one day going to turn into these little demons who don't want to be around you, who don't agree with anything you say. As a matter of fact, we do that a lot to parents. Somewhere up the road, just around the corner, your child's going to change and develop behaviors that are unlikable, that are put-offish, that are mean. Well, you know the truth? That doesn't always happen. First of all, I've heard many parents say that the teen years are their favorite years. They enjoyed the young years, and yes, although the teen years bring many different issues, they watch their children mature. And yes, they contend with a scary culture, but they watch their children deal with it well. There is nothing innate about the passage of time in childhood that automatically makes kids more unlikable. And we have fed this myth to parents for so long that any of you listening to this who have 9-year-olds, you're thinking, oh gosh, I have 3 more years to enjoy him. No. The rule of parenting is, the better your parenting on the front end, the more likely you are to enjoy them every year of their lives, even age 14. I'm Dr. Ray.
I'm back with Joshua Katz, managing partner at the Enright Group in Washington. He's a national security and intelligence expert, and his firm specializes in that. We've been talking about the amazing security demands of the visit of Pope Francis to the United States. But another reason I wanted to have Josh on Church and Culture is to talk about something that he has put together with the Enright Group, and that is something he's calling Families of Faith, Safety and Security in the Modern Era. And Josh, we were talking earlier about the need to start having a conversation about security, the security of parishes, of churches, of mosques, of synagogues. But you've actually put something together to formally help these families of faith to get their act together. Is that correct?
Yes. And, you know, I think as a family of faith, you mentioned before the break that I'm Jewish, and my family, my wife is a Sunday school teacher. We have three children. Our three children attend Sunday school, and they participate a lot in our synagogue. And as a security professional, you know, I can never turn that off, really, probably much to my wife's chagrin.
By the way, Josh, I got to interrupt you. My father was in charge of safety for the Federal Aviation Agency. After being a Branniff pilot and a World War II pilot, he could never turn it off either. So I get that.
Well, you know, it's that mentality. I think it's once you have it, and you can't shake it. And I walked into my wife's class and really just sort of was in awe at the absolute lack of security in my synagogue, which we know is synagogues are always talked about and as a target for Islamic extremists. Actually, now I think as a note, just for your listeners, is the Catholic Church is discussed more in threats from ISIS than our synagogues. Just as a point of note, which is interesting.
That is interesting, given the history of the Middle East.
It absolutely is, and you know, we in my family we discuss security all the time. We talk about the what to do if, and what the kids think, and what the kids learn both in school as well as in synagogue, and we realize that there is an absolute lack of, first of all, conversation like the one we're having right now, but then there's a lack of real good security planning. And the one, I think, the one issue people have about it is they believe there's this trade-off between a scale between openness and security. And there isn't. I think that's the absolute wrong way to view security. I think the reason is because there's a long history of security professionals trying to sell a particular technology solution.
Yeah. By the way, I want to tell our listeners that that one thing I found out in talking to you about this, that this is not about what Josh Katz and Enright Group are offering, is not a bunch of technology to do the job for people.
Yeah, it's because that doesn't work ultimately. And it has the opposite effect of what I mentioned before the break, which is the openness and the engagement our communities need in our lives, not to mention it's the right security approach. So ultimately, anything that we recommend to a faith-based organization is around that one premise, that we can continue and actually increase engagement while also increasing security. And I think that it's a new way to really look at security, and hopefully it's going to change the way we discuss security in our organizations as well as at home.
Then let's sort of provide our listeners with a kind of broad outline of, let's say they invited you to come to their parish and present your program and Families of Faith. And what should they expect?
Well, they should expect a conversation. It's a conversation very similar to the one we're having now, but talking to people about the threats that are surrounding us every day. What's going on? Why is it going on? And what are some of the parishes' concerns? Because we all have concerns, and some of those concerns are based on what we see in the news. Some of them are based on, you know, what we read or about history, and we can talk about them. And then, you know, realistically, I think a lot of our fears, especially modern fears, are about things that are really, really scary, but they're not the main things that we need to worry about because they happen so infrequently. It's the other things that we need to be focused on, which is, you know, threats from local crime, threats from, you know, people that want to in a school environment that want to exploit security vulnerabilities in order to gain access to our children. Those are the things that we really need to engage. And I think we've come up with a very, very easy, proprietary method that is so incredibly intuitive that, and the results can be applied in numerous security situations. So you're not having to learn, the 100 different scenarios. We're providing communities with a very, with the skills that they need and that can be applied to so many different things that they can just apply it that day.
You're not talking about everyone packing a gun, I assume.
No, you know what? People ask me that all the time, by the way. And I've given national security seminars around the country. I've been on the news and talked about this. And I am one of the most highly trained people with a firearm. I have done it as an Army Ranger, was trained at CIA. And I will tell you that bringing firearms into this discussion is counterproductive, and we don't have the training or the time to actually implement something like that in a way that's going to be useful.
By the way, I think one thing that you said to me over coffee might help our listeners get a kind of grip on the kind of conversation that you would have with them. You said to me that in the cases where a gunman comes into a school, probably the worst thing a teacher can do is to crowd all the children into a corner behind a desk or something.
Oh, yes. So all of your listeners that have kids or that have had kids or that have even engaged with a child, right, know that children are not quiet. And especially when children get scared, trying to keep them quiet is the near impossible task. The worst scenario, and the scenario that we're going to talk about actually at the end of anything we do for an organization, is that active shooter situation. Because first of all, it's the worst; it's the hardest to get your head around. Because there will be fatalities, there will be casualties, and there's nothing to do once it starts, really, to prevent a casualty. But, having said that, the worst thing we can do in that situation is to curl up into a ball, and the common security practice right now for an active shooter is to curl up into a ball and go into a corner. It doesn't work. It won't ever work.
Does it just make you a better target?
Well, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. I did some analysis on somebody of limited capability, and this is something, you know, we talk to with communities, is after looking at the community, talking to members, leadership, hearing their issues, and also seeing the sort of community, how things work, doing a really quick assessment just so people can get in their heads how long it would take and the number of casualties over a given period of time in that situation. And the numbers are incredibly staggering. So we need to...
But isn't this basically what teachers are trained to do in most schools?
Absolutely, yes. Because they believe, and I think falsely, that it's their only option. I think that they have better options. It's just we have to rethink that paradigm, and we have to stop believing that if we huddle for long enough, somebody else is going to take care of the problem.
Well, that sort of takes my breath away because, you know, I have kids in school, you have kids in school, and, of course, there's Sunday school. I'm sure that if someone broke into my son's high school today, all the teachers would take their kids and stick them in a corner somewhere and barricade the door and do exactly what you said they shouldn't do.
Yeah, and I recently gave a presentation to a group of Sunday school teachers, and we talked about this this aspect is the in this worst case scenario as adults, as parents, as husbands, as wives, as teachers, administration, whomever, it's our job to protect our children, and we need to, in this case, do a better job. There are ways that we can very quickly change that mentality and change the tactics we're using if we can get beyond the fear. And the fear, I think, really immobilizes people.
I want to tell our listeners how they can reach you, Joshua Katz. On the Internet, the website is www.inrightgroup.com. And if you go to the page, you'll see there's a button to click to contact Joshua and his partners at the Inright Group. And I'm sure that you would welcome inquiries from anyone who's interested about not just church, parish, synagogue, mosque security, but school security.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the same fundamentals can be applied at all levels. And you know, it starts, Deal, and I'm very thankful for you you having me on, because it starts with this conversation. Let's talk about it. Let's reduce the fear of the conversation. And then let's employ some really easy-to-use tactics that are intuitive and that can move us to a way to protect our families, our community, our religious centers, because this is those groups, those things are the foundation of America.
You told me also that it's not unusual to walk into a church or a parish or a synagogue and to find that there are windows and doors that don't even get locked.
Yeah, I think people would be, one of the things I talk about, share a couple stories, the places that I have gotten into just by walking through an unopened door. It's really...
Unlocked and unopened.
Correct. The the inability to actually lock a door is a very religious-centric issue, I think, because we want to be open. We want to be
right.
That locked door signifies that we are closed off. And we don't need to be closed off when we lock a door. That door, I think, is that locked door is not should not be viewed as symbolic of us being closed. What is, I think, more symbolic of us being closed is, and you and I spoke about this too, is you walk into a church, you walk into a synagogue, and nobody talks to you, right?
Right. Well, unfortunately, there are a lot of parishes where you go in as a stranger, and you might get a nod or a smile, but no, there's nobody assigned to come up and greet you on behalf of the community.
Right, and I think that's one of the things we're not going to change overnight. One of the things that we need to start talking about is how do we as people, as part of the community, both in the religious sense, but also in our, you know, our neighborhoods, how do we become more engaging with each other in a day and an age where technology is enabling us to not? But we need to bring that humanity back, and that little part of humanity, that engagement, that human interaction, is so incredibly vital to our security.
Well, one thing you stressed to me when we talked over and over is that becoming more security conscious, and let's just take a parish, for example, becoming more security conscious can actually make the parish community more welcoming to the community and to strangers.
And that's the point. I think as a business owner, what I want my clients to do is I want my clients to become more engaging, because anything that I'm going to recommend in the security sense that closes, whether it's a corporation or a congressman or a parish, the one thing we can't do is we should not remove ourselves from the community. We need to stop viewing security as a trade-off. Security as a trade-off with engagement.
Yeah, and also it's not settled by technology. I want to underscore that, which we discussed earlier.
Yeah, and that I was talking with a colleague of mine today, and that's a point that I think the Gangrene Group right now is battling against is the fact that companies that have for years sold security solutions, security alarms, and what have you, has made security into this, you're either vulnerable or you have a wall. And, there's no middle ground. And I think that we can do things without a wall, without a new technology piece, that will make us more secure overnight. And it's just a matter of talking about it and ensuring that the right procedure is in place for the right group of people. Without technology, if there is technology, great. We use it. We don't throw it out. But it's something we recommend.
So the way a parish, a synagogue, a church, a mosque would get started is by contacting you, Joshua Katz, at the Enright Group. Again, that's www.enrightgroup, and that's spelled E-N-R-I-G-H-T, enrightgroup.com. And I assume that you would just start with a kind of a free consultation. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And what I really enjoy doing, actually, is that first engagement with the organization. And I encourage the organization to bring as many of their parishioners or congregants together for it so that we can start to have this conversation and people can see that there is there's a lot of things that we can do to increase security, to do it the right way, and how it cross-pollinates different procedures. The same procedure basically be used for a lot of situations, but also it's not a technological solution. This is a it's a people solution.
Well, it's kind of like you described what would be the best deterrent in the case of Pope Francis's visit, and that would just be a heightened awareness on the part of everyone attending the masses, these celebrations and so forth, to be sensitive to things that appear very sort of out of place in their environment.
Absolutely. And to move again, probably the 50th time I've used the word fear, but to move beyond the fear of the, I normally don't go up to strangers, but to go up to strangers and not in an accusatorial manner, but to go up to a stranger or a visitor, and embrace them in the spirit of the event, in the spirit of the Pope's visit, and in the spirit of our religious communities, and to embrace, yes, there are security benefits, there are a lot of security benefits to doing that, so we should use them.
By the way, since I've got you on the phone, I've got a few minutes left, and you're a practicing Jew, serious about it. Tell everyone, for the sake of those who don't know, what is Yom Kippur that starts today?
Well, Yom Kippur starts at sundown tonight, and is the holiest day in the Jewish year. And this is the day that our lives are written in the Book of Life for the next year. And it's a time of reflection. It's a time of looking inward at how we have acted as Jews, how we have acted poorly, or how we've acted well, and to repent for our sins, because we all have, and to look forward to the new year as God's children, and to better ourselves.
Well, those of you who are listening, want you to know that regardless of when you hear this show, we did tape it on the really just a few hours before the sun goes down on Yom Kippur 2015. And Joshua Katz, what would be the one thing that you would want our listeners to take away from this interview, from this introduction to the issue of security in our faith communities?
Is more conversation is better. We need to all discuss the issues and our concerns together as a community, together as a family, because it's only through that conversation that we are going to triumph, that we're going to secure our families, our religious centers, our constitution, and to ensure that our lives continue, not only continue, but thrive into the future.
Thank you. So our listeners can mark this down if they want to contact Joshua. He's at the Enright Group, spelled with an E, in Washington. The name of his program is Families of Faith, Safety and Security in the Modern Era. Josh, it's been great to have you on Church and Culture.
And thank you so much for having me on, Deal. Thank you.
And we'll have you back sometime down the road when you can report back on your progress.
Great. I would really like that.
And to all of you that are listening, please join me at this time and on this day next week.
comments or questions about church and culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net. If you want to use your gifts and talent to support women and the unborn, contact the Arbor Women Pregnancy Center to volunteer. Arbor Women needs pro-life people to support, nurture, and empower women facing unexpected pregnancies. Arbor Women are in need of nurses and sonographers with a current Michigan license, as well as pregnancy and post-abortion counselors. Call the volunteer coordinator at 734-994-8863. That's 734-994-8863 to learn how you can help.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. It was biblical scholar St. Jerome who said, "Ignorance of Scripture is ignorance of Christ." As we know, Scripture teaches us to be pro-life. But it is not primarily the passages about the unborn child that convey this lesson. Rather, the pro-life message comes through on every page of Scripture in the great themes of God as Lord over human choices, the Savior's victory over the power of death, the call to practice justice by saving the helpless, and the meaning of love, by which we sacrifice ourselves to make room for the other person. From the beginning of the Bible to the end, we learn that God hates death but loves life. Knowledge of Scripture helps us to do the same. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Cultural Madness and Catholic Sanity: How to Live in Love Without Illusion in This New America. That's the title for our October 17th conference in Dearborn, Michigan. America is adrift on some rough seas, and Catholic truth is supposed to be a lighthouse. Complacent, self-identified Catholics, however, have hid Christ's light under a bushel. And so the people are walking in darkness and imagining that it's fantasy. Americans are making up reality as we go along. We've made up a new definition of marriage. Some parents refuse to assign a gender to their newborns. Let the child make it up as he goes along. President Obama denies that we're in a religious war with Islamic jihadists, but saying so doesn't make it so. Contraception activists have long promised liberation. They don't look at reality. We're a culture of single-parent families, epidemic STDs, gender confusion, and a 50% out-of-wedlock birth rate. Hey, Planned Parenthood can now monetize aborted babies, and young girls get applause for being hot rather than for being smart. What about men? They're making up romance during pornographic laptop dances. We're amusing ourselves to death and surrounded by perpetual entertainment, extravagant advertising promises, and false gospels are assuring us that we can both revere God and be God. It's an imaginary social world disconnected from the real world God created. So how do we live in love without illusion in this age of cultural madness? Learn how. Saturday, October 17th at the Ford Motor Company Conference Center in Dearborn, Michigan. Teresa Tomeo and I will be talking about Islam, porn, advertising, body image, news media, and more. It's all day with lunch included, but seats are limited. Saturday, October 17th. Learn more at AveMariaRadio.net. That, again, is AveMariaRadio.net.
What are some of the common temptations against prayer? The Catechism claims that the most common yet hidden temptation is lack of faith, which is expressed not so much in a declaration of disbelief.